Want to try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, will this send me spiraling out of my routine? Time to consult the online experts.
Hi, Felicia here with 1 million followers. That bite will destroy your metabolism.
Is it really that bad? I had protein this morning. Ugh, but it looks so good.
Only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Pie is only 2 steps from here. Am I overthinking again? Oh, the kids would really love this.
Insulin sensitivity.
Always
Stop it.
They don't know your body, only you do. Signos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at signos.com. That's SIGNOS.com with code SPARK. Signos.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're about to take a deep dive into one of the biggest true crime cases in the universe. Or, at least, on our part of the planet. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
In the late summer of 1989, Beverly Hills found itself at the center of one of the most gruesome and perplexing crimes in recent memory. Inside the walls of a grand mansion on Elm Drive, Jose and Kitty Menendez were found brutally murdered, shot at close range, their bodies riddled with bullets. It was a scene so violent, so shocking, that it shook even the most seasoned detectives. Beverly Hills, a place of luxury and privilege, was now the setting of a brutal crime that would soon captivate the entire nation. The murderers, it turned out, were not strangers or hired hitmen. The killers were the couple's own sons, Lyle and Eric Menendez. The murders themselves were shocking. But what followed over the next 3 decades became a legal saga that raised questions about justice, abuse, and the very nature of truth. The brothers' defense was nearly as unimaginable as the crime itself. They claimed years of horrific sexual and emotional abuse at the hands of their father, Jose Menendez, drove them to commit the killings in a desperate act of survival. It was a defense that split the court of public opinion. Many saw the brothers as nothing more than greedy, entitled sons who killed their parents to inherit their fortune. Others believed that behind the walls of the Menendez mansion, a far darker story had played out for years, one of unspeakable abuse and fear, culminating in the tragic murders. More than 3 decades have passed since that night, and while the brothers have spent years behind bars, the case has remained a point of fascination. Today, new evidence has come to light, raising questions about the legitimacy of their convictions. Los Angeles District Attorney George Gascon has reopened the investigation into the Menendez case, reviewing evidence that could potentially reshape the entire narrative of what happened that night in 1989. At the heart of this new development is a letter, written by Eric Menendez when he was just 17 years old, that could change everything. But to understand why this new evidence matters, we have to go back to the beginning, to that fateful night when the lives of the Menendez family were forever altered. The day started like any other in the affluent Beverly Hills neighborhood. The Menendez family appeared to be living the American dream. Jose Menendez, a successful and powerful executive in the music industry, had built a life of wealth and status. His wife, Kitty, was a former beauty queen, now devoted to her 2 sons, Lyle and Eric. But beneath the surface of this seemingly perfect family was a growing tension, one that would explode in a deadly confrontation. On the evening of August 20th, 1989, Lyle and Eric Menendez entered their family home armed with shotguns. What exactly happened in those moments has been pieced together through court testimony and the brothers' own confessions. The brothers fired repeatedly, killing their parents in a barrage of gunfire. Jose Menendez was shot in the head, and Kitty, attempting to flee, was shot multiple times in the face and chest. For months after the murders, the Menendez brothers lived lavishly, spending money on luxury cars, designer clothes, and expensive trips. They appeared to show no signs of guilt or remorse, fueling speculation that their motive was financial. But when they were arrested in 1990, their defense took an unexpected turn. The brothers admitted to killing their parents, but claimed they did so out of fear. Fear that their father would kill them if they revealed the years of sexual abuse they had endured at his hands. In court, the brothers painted a chilling picture of their childhood. According to their testimony, Jose Menendez was a controlling and abusive man who sexually molested both Lyle and Eric for years. Lyle, the older of the two, testified that the abuse began when he was just 6 years old. Eric, too, described in graphic detail how his father had assaulted him repeatedly throughout his adolescence. They claimed their father's abuse wasn't just physical but psychological as well, with Jose exerting control over every aspect of their lives, even their friendships and relationships. Kitty, they alleged, was aware of the abuse but did nothing to stop it. Instead, she turned a blind eye, more concerned with maintaining the image of a perfect family. The brothers' defense was shocking, but it was also polarizing. Many in the public, and in the courtroom, struggled to reconcile the image of Jose Menendez, the successful businessman, with the monster the brothers described. Prosecutors argued that the brothers had fabricated the allegations of abuse to justify the murders. They pointed out that after killing their parents, Lyle and Eric had gone on a spending spree, indulging in the very lifestyle their father had provided for them. To them, this wasn't a case of abused children lashing out in fear. It was a case of greed. But for those who believed the brothers' story, the Menendez home was a prison. The boys' lavish spending after the murders was seen not as a sign of guilt, but as a desperate attempt to live the lives they had been denied. They were young men, suddenly freed from the grip of an abusive father, now trying to experience life for the first time. The spending, some argued, was not proof of a murder for money, but rather the reckless behavior of traumatized individuals. The first trial ended in a hung jury. Some jurors believed the brothers' story of abuse, while others did not. The case was retried, but this time, the defense was restricted. The judge ruled that the defense could not rely on the abuse excuse as a primary argument. The second trial focused solely on the evidence of murder, with less emphasis on the brothers' claims of abuse. This time, the jury found Lyle and Eric Menendez guilty of first-degree murder. In 1996, they were sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. For many, the Menendez case seemed to end there. The brothers were convicted, justice had been served, and the media circus moved on to the next big trial. But for others, the case never truly ended. Over the years, Lyle and Eric have maintained their claims of abuse, and their story has continued to captivate the public's imagination. Documentaries, books, and even movies have kept the case in the spotlight, each offering new interpretations of what might have happened behind the closed doors of the Menendez mansion. Now, with the emergence of new evidence, the case is once again under scrutiny. Central to this new chapter in the Menendez saga is a letter, written by Eric Menendez when he was just 17 years old. The letter, addressed to his cousin, describes the abuse he was enduring at the hands of his father. For decades, this letter remained hidden, but its recent discovery has led to a renewed interest in the brothers' claims of abuse. Eric's letter, along with the testimony of a former member of the boy band Menudo, who alleges that Jose Menendez sexually assaulted him during the 1980s, has prompted District Attorney George Gascon to reopen the case. At a press conference, Gascon made it clear that his office had an ethical obligation to review the new evidence. He emphasized that no decision had been made about whether the brothers would receive a new trial, but he acknowledged that the evidence raised serious questions. "We are not at this point ready to say that we either believe or do not believe that information," Gascon said. "But we have a moral and ethical obligation to review what is being presented to us and make a determination based on whether this information should have been presented at trial." The decision to reopen the case has been met with both praise and skepticism. Supporters of the brothers argue that this new evidence could change everything. They believe that had the letter been presented during the original trial, the jury might have reached a different verdict. For them, this is an opportunity to correct a miscarriage of justice and finally give Lyle and Eric a chance to tell their full story. But not everyone shares this view. Critics of the brothers argue that reopening the case is unnecessary and dangerous. They point out that the brothers were convicted in a court of law, and that reopening old wounds could do more harm than good. Some family members, like Kitty Menendez's brother, Milton Anderson, have expressed outrage at the idea that Lyle and Eric could be released. Anderson has made it clear that he believes the brothers acted out of greed, not fear, and that they deserve to spend the rest of their lives in prison. Yet, the brothers' defense team argues that our understanding of sexual abuse has evolved since the 1990s. Back then, the concept of abuse excuses was controversial, and many jurors may have been less likely to believe the brothers' claims. Today, with a broader understanding of trauma and its long-lasting effects, there is growing recognition that Lyle and Eric's story deserves to be heard in full. The defense team argues that had the jury been presented with the new evidence, the letter, the testimony of the Menudo band member, and other corroborating evidence, the outcome of the trial might have been different. As the case continues to unfold, the Menendez brothers remain in prison, waiting for a decision that could alter the course of their lives. They have spent more than half their lives behind bars, but with each new piece of evidence, the possibility of freedom seems closer. For the brothers and their supporters, this is a chance for redemption. But for those who believe justice was served in 1996, reopening the case feels like an unnecessary and painful chapter in an already tragic story. What happens next is in the hands of the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office. George Gascon and his team will continue to review the evidence, weighing the claims of abuse against the facts of the case. If the evidence is deemed credible, the brothers could be resentenced or even granted a new trial. If not, they will likely remain in prison for the rest of their lives, their story a closed chapter in the annals of American criminal history. But this case has never truly felt closed, has it? The Menendez brothers' saga has lingered in the public consciousness, not only because of the brutal nature of the murders, but because of the unsettling questions that have persisted for years. Were they simply entitled, greedy young men who gunned down their parents for money? Or were they tortured victims of unspeakable abuse, driven to commit an unthinkable act out of sheer desperation? The truth, for many, lies somewhere in the murky middle, where human motives and emotions are complex, contradictory, and difficult to fully comprehend. For years, the narrative of their case was clear-cut. Two wealthy sons wanted access to their parents' fortune, so they plotted and executed the murders of Jose and Kitty Menendez. It was the kind of story that fit neatly into a box, easily digestible by a public eager for a clear sense of right and wrong. But as time passed and as new voices emerged, that story began to unravel. The claims of sexual abuse, long dismissed by many as fabrications to win sympathy, started to gain a different kind of attention. Experts on trauma and abuse began to weigh in, suggesting that the brothers' behavior, even their lavish spending in the wake of the murders, could be understood as the actions of deeply traumatized individuals, finally free from the control of an abusive father. Suddenly, the case became more than just a story of murder. It became a story of the long-lasting effects of abuse, the ways it can twist and warp the human psyche, and the lengths to which some will go to escape it. The letter written by Eric Menendez at 17 is particularly haunting. In it, he described the fear he lived with daily, the constant abuse by his father, and his sense of hopelessness. For those who have read it, the letter is a cry for help that never arrived. It paints a picture of a boy trapped in a life he couldn't control, one whose only escape was through violence. The letter is crucial because it was written before the murders, offering what some see as irrefutable proof that the brothers were, indeed, victims of abuse. But this letter, like much of the evidence in this case, is complicated. Skeptics argue that it could have been a calculated move, part of a broader plan to create a defense for the murders. After all, the Menendez brothers were nothing if not strategic. They tried to cover their tracks after the murders, giving false statements to police and attempting to manipulate public perception of the crime. Could the letter be just another piece of that manipulation? And then there's the testimony of the former Menudo band member, who has come forward with allegations that Jose Menendez sexually assaulted him in the 1980s. His claims add a chilling layer to the brothers' defense. If true, they suggest that Jose's abusive behavior extended beyond his immediate family, that he was a predator who used his power and influence to victimize others. But as with the letter, this testimony raises more questions than it answers. Why is it only coming to light now, decades after the fact? What motive, if any, could the former band member have for coming forward? Is it possible that this is an attempt to align himself with a high-profile case and gain attention? The questions surrounding the Menendez case are endless, and every new piece of evidence only seems to deepen the mystery. That's why the decision made by George Gascon and the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office is so critical. This isn't just about whether or not the brothers deserve a new trial. It's about how we, as a society, understand abuse, trauma, and justice. The Menendez brothers have spent nearly 30 years in prison, paying the price for the murders of their parents. But as our understanding of abuse has evolved, so too has our understanding of their case. In the 1990s, the idea that two young men could be driven to kill by years of abuse was difficult for many to accept. Today, after decades of research into trauma and its effects, that idea doesn't seem so far-fetched. For some, the brothers are victims who deserve a second chance at freedom. For others, they are cold-blooded killers who should never see the light of day again. The public's fascination with the Menendez brothers isn't just about the brutal nature of the crime. It's about the questions their case raises. How do we balance the need for justice with the understanding that abuse can fundamentally change a person? Can we hold someone accountable for their actions while also acknowledging the circumstances that may have led them to those actions? And most importantly, is it ever too late to right a potential wrong? As the Menendez case heads back to court, these are the questions that will be at the forefront of the proceedings. The new evidence, if deemed credible, could lead to a resentencing or even a retrial for the brothers. But whether or not they walk free, the Menendez case will continue to be a symbol of the complexities of justice in cases of abuse. As the legal process unfolds, the brothers will remain behind bars, waiting for a decision that could change their lives forever. For some, the possibility of their release is a sign of progress, proof that our legal system can adapt to new understandings of trauma and abuse. For others, it is a travesty of justice, an attempt to rewrite history and absolve two men of a crime they committed in cold blood. Whatever the outcome, one thing is certain. The Menendez brothers' story is far from over. Decades after they were convicted of murder, their case continues to captivate the public's imagination, raising questions about justice, abuse, and the human capacity for both violence and survival. And as new evidence emerges, we are reminded that the truth is never as simple as it seems. In the coming months, the courts will decide whether the Menendez brothers deserve a new trial or a reduced sentence. But for those who have followed the case for years, the real question is whether justice, true justice, has ever been served. And as we wait for that answer, we are left to grapple with the same unsettling question that has haunted this case from the beginning. How much of what happened behind the closed doors of the Menendez mansion do we really know?
In a world where the darkest secrets lie just beneath the surface.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence says otherwise.
Where hidden killers roam unnoticed in the shadows.
Well, I think you would definitely be looking at a blend of toxic, very bad narcissistic personality traits, and they will be vengeful and possibly resort to violence.
Join Tony Bruschi as he uncovers the truth behind the most chilling cases.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence clearly says otherwise.
Each episode, we dig deep into the minds of those who commit the unthinkable.
To your point on narcissism, he thinks in his own mind how witty he is.
Yeah.
But he lost that jury. I was done with him in 2 minutes.
From unsolved mysteries to infamous crimes.
Geez, you've just talked about how you've taught yourself how to do everything under the sun. I bet you did a YouTube video, How to Best Kill Somebody with a Knife.
Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi takes you where few dare to go.
How does someone with such a dark secret go unnoticed for so long?
With multiple new episodes every single day.
We're not just telling stories, we're seeking justice.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Want to try a free sample of Berry Pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, will this send me spiraling out of my routine? Time to consult the online experts.
Hi, Felicia here with 1 million followers. That bite will destroy your metabolism.
Is it really that bad? I had protein this morning. Ugh, but it looks so good.
Only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Pie is only 2 steps from here. Am I overthinking again? Oh, the kids would really love this.
Insulin sensitivity.
Always
Stop it. They don't know your body, only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at cygnos.com. That's Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
2 ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.